Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be with you. Hey, I've been a pastor for almost 13 years, and during those 13 years, I have consistently veered away from talking about what we are going to be talking about for the next 3 weeks, okay, which is money and generosity. Now, let me tell you why. A couple of reasons. Number one, I grew up around the church, and I heard oftentimes money being talked about or taught on, and I always felt very uneasy with the message and the way that it came. Secondly, I never wanted to, as a pastor leading a local church like this, for money to become a barrier to people coming to an understanding of the goodness and the greatness of Christ. And so for those two reasons, I kind of consistently said, you know what, we're just not going to go here very often. You see, the minute that I say, welcome to Harbor, hey, for the next few weeks, we're going to talk about generosity and finances, there's all this shifting and sweating that starts to go on in the seats. I know this. Number one, there's shifting and sweating because some of us walk in today and we are absolutely convinced that the church is after our money, okay? So the minute I start talking about it, you're like, man, I knew you're going to invite me to church today and the guy would be talking about money. I just knew it. It taps into one of your deepest fears. For others in the room, when we start talking about resources, they're shifting, they're sweating because it taps into what is one of our greatest fears or concerns or sources of stress. And so it simply reminds us this morning that our finances are out of control or they're a mess or that it's creating stress in our lives. And so you're like, thank you. I come this morning and you're reminding me of what is not going well in my life, okay? And that's a reality. That's a reality. And so for that reason, I stayed away from the topic. And yet, as I've considered my life, Beth, my wife, our journey through 13, 14 years of marriage now, we too experienced many years where our finances were a mess, a source of stress. I remember early on, right after we got married, I actually left ministry in the church for a little while. We were still a part of a local church, but I wasn't going to sure that I was going to continue down this road of pastoring a church. And so the first job I could find, the only job I could find right out of that church was a job at Applebee's, okay? Now listen, I was making $30 a lunch shift at Applebee's. When you are in college and like Taco Bell is a good date with your girlfriend, $30 is okay. However, when you have a newborn and you're living with your in-laws, $30 is like working for a box of Huggies. And so every day we'd come home and count our pennies. It was like counting our diapers. And I remember during this time thinking, man, this is hard. This is difficult. I left Applebee's to join a roofing company, and I began going around our city selling roofing materials after a major hailstorm. And I actually was the last employee to receive a paycheck from that company before they filed bankruptcy and fled to the north in the middle of the night. Okay, not a good thing. And yet, that paycheck was one of the ways that God provided for us to make a transition to move to another city, to put a down payment on a home, and actually to own our first home. And it was one of the ways, one of the many ways that through the years we have seen God being faithful to provide for our needs time and time again, even during the seasons of the greatest stress. And we've come to learn that He is faithful, and that His scriptures that talk about money are true, and His promises to provide are real. And so I've actually come to see that all of the reasons I had for not talking about generosity, money management, investments, and so forth were misguided. We're misguided. Because I want you to hear this before we get going. I'll tell you a couple of things that really are going to pave the way for where we go over these next few weeks. I believe at the core of who I am that God is for your joy, not your begrudging submission. He's for your joy. And because the Bible addresses the topic of money more than almost any other topic in the Bible, there must be a direct correlation between the way in which we manage our money, invest our money, spend our money, and so forth, and the degree to which we experience things like joy or peace or contentment. So, by not teaching about resources and generosity, I actually become a risk of impeding your joy. I can get in the way of your joy if we don't talk about it. And you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, let me share this with you. I don't believe that God is after your money. Let me just dispel those fears today. He's not after your money. He's after your heart. It's a laughable notion that the creator of the universe is depending upon your $50, as if he's like, man, if instead of going to McDonald's today, they just go home and invest that money in something greater, man, then I could finally do something good in the world. That is not God's heart for you, okay? Okay, it's laughable. God wants your heart, because he knows when he has your heart that your heart will be filled with joy, and only when he has your heart and your heart's filled with joy will you be able to enjoy your money and manage it wisely without it destroying you. That's what Jesus says over and over and over again in the Gospels, because he knows that one of the greatest threats to our heart for him and our love for him is money, especially where we live in this time, in this day. One of the greatest impediments, there's almost no greater competitor for your heart and your allegiance to Christ, and therefore for your joy, than money. So, for the next few weeks, we are going to look at a simple truth that I think has the ability to bring about a dramatic shift in the way that you see your resources, in the way that you manage them, in the way that you invest them. And I'll give you this truth, and then we're going to spend the next few weeks unpacking this, all right? Here's the truth. I believe that God created you for a life of extravagance, but not a life of extravagant consumption, which is the message that we're surrounded with. We got to get more, we got to get more, we got to get more. But rather, a life of extravagant contentment. That word means excessive, overflowing. A life of extravagant contentment, of joy, and of generosity. Okay? That's the truth we're going to build these in the next 3 weeks on. God created you for an extravagant life, of a joy of contentment and generosity. I think one of the gives us in our lives, what that would actually look like. And in Matthew chapter 6, he speaks directly about our resources and the influence that money and possessions have on our lives. You say, well, money doesn't influence me. I don't really care about it that much. Well, let's just play along with me then, and we'll see where this text takes us in these next few moments, okay? Look with me at verse 22. Because Jesus is talking about money, he's talking about our treasures, he's talking about our hearts, and then he says something really cryptic in verse 22. It's like, where's this coming from? He says this, "Your eye's a lamp that provides light for your body. When your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light. But when your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep that darkness is." What is Jesus talking about? Money, treasures, eyes, sight, darkness. Well, Jesus is giving us an example, almost an analogy or a metaphor. He said, okay, imagine with me. This morning, there's light in this room, right? And as a result of your being able to see, you can navigate this room and see where you're going without stumbling over people around you. However, if you were unable to see, and yet there was still light in this room, but your physical eyesight was gone, you would walk around this room stumbling over the chairs, over the poles, over the people in front of you, because even though there's light around you, your eyes are dark, and therefore your whole body, in a sense, is filled with physical darkness, and you stumble. And Jesus' point is simple, and here it is, that money has such an influence in our lives that it can keep us from seeing just how much an influence in our lives it plays. Another way of saying that is this. The influence of money has the power to keep you from looking honestly at your life. In Luke chapter 12, if you go there, it's the cross-reference to this text. Jesus actually speaks the same thing. It's Luke's account of what Matthew records here in Matthew chapter 6. And before Jesus records what Jesus speaks, he says something very interesting in verse 15. Jesus says, "Beware, guard against every kind of greed." Now, Matthew doesn't record this in chapter 6, but Luke does. And when Jesus says, "Guard against every kind of greed," the word greed is also the word we use materialism. It simply means the inordinate desire or dependence on material things and on money. Notice Jesus didn't have to say, "Watch out, you might be murdering someone," right? He didn't have to say, "Watch out, you might be committing adultery." For the most part, we know when we're murdering someone. However, Jesus says, "Beware, watch out, you might be greedy. You might have an over-desire or an inordinate desire, a blown-out-of desire for material things." You know, as a pastor, I've had many conversations with people who have wanted to talk with me about anger. They want to get together and talk about anger, bitterness, an inability to forgive someone, lust, pride, whatever it might be. What's interesting is in 13 years, I've never had someone come to me and say, Jed, I'm materialistic. Help. Never. Never. Why? Because we never consider it. We never consider the fact that money influences perhaps more than we think that it does. So I want to give you a few examples. So you can say, well, is this true of me? I don't know. Let me give you a few examples of how money influences us to the degree that it actually can blind us to its influence. Number one, materialism has the power to get you to work in such a way or at such a pace that it drains the life out of you and the people you love. Materialism has a way of getting you to work at such a way or at such a pace that it drains the life out of you and the people that you love. I talk to individuals and families all of the time who are exhausted because they're working frantically, not out of necessity, but for a lifestyle. Those are two very different things. For example, I worked Applebee's for a year, and then I moved and I mowed lawns and I sold roofing materials. Why? Not because I loved those things. That wasn't my dream job, okay? But because I knew in that moment that my family depended on it. So I'd do anything I could. I'd work hours beyond what was maybe even healthy for me at the time in order to provide. Listen, there are times when you will work frantically. You'll work hard. You'll work long hours in order to pay off something from the past or to prepare for something in the future or to meet a current need. That's not what I'm talking about, because at times we need to do that, right? However, what I'm speaking of is that at times we adjust our lifestyle to match our income so that no matter how much we bring in, we spend the same amount. And so we move into such a frantic lifestyle pace and pressure, but it's not dependent upon what we need. It's dependent upon more of what we've become accustomed to needing or wanting, right? There's a difference between those two. As a result, there's no margin, and we lock ourselves into this pace and pressure that's unsustainable, and we grow exhausted. And this morning, you'll know if this is true of you. You're exhausted. There's no joy. There's no peace, but you're caught up in the middle of it, and you don't know why. Why? Well, maybe what Jesus says is true. The eye is dark, and we don't see the influence that money has on us. Second, materialism will keep you from asking hard questions about your lifestyle. One of the challenges of living in a relatively prosperous section of the world is that we regularly rub shoulders with people who have better jobs and higher incomes than we do, don't we? And we're constantly around people who are a pay grade ahead of us, who are a career path in front of us, right? And so we're also surrounded by such excess that we look around and we would never consider the fact that we're actually wealthy in comparison with the majority world, right? We live in the wealthiest society in the world, especially in the last 5 to 10 years. 70% of the wealth in the world is in the hands of 5% of the people, which is pretty much America. And if you're a professional in here today, you're at the top 20% of that 5%. What's that mean? Listen, guys, it's a Western world 21st century problem for us to have to figure out whether or not to have 32 or 322 channels, okay? HDTV. Most people in the majority world are not going home trying to figure out which channel of NFL ticket to watch this afternoon, all right? Now, I like NFL, and I'm not digging on cable. But what I'm saying is we'd never consider the fact that the things that we have are actually needs that we, are actually wants that we don't really need. We don't consider it. Therefore, we rarely ask the hard questions about our lifestyle, such as, do I need to spend this money, much money on my home, or do I need this type of clothing, or do I need to allocate that much toward entertainment, or is there a way that I could arrange my lifestyle to give more to the poor, to give more to my friends and to my neighbors, or to invest in the local church? We don't ask those questions. Why? Because the eye's dark, and we don't consider how money influences us. Last example of the way money influences us. As a result of its influence, what might become opportunities to give turn into a means to get more. Well, what do you mean? The interesting thing about the emergence of companies like Craigslist and eBay in the last 15 years, and I use them all the time. I like these companies. But the influence of these is that they have turned everything we own into an item to sell instead of a gift to give. Now listen, there's nothing wrong with selling things, okay? Many of us need to go home and sell things. We need to get rid of things, okay? That's not what I'm talking about. But do you realize that there was a time when people would actually give away or sell their possessions to give to people in need? And I'm not talking about the old refrigerator in your basement that doesn't work, right? Or that piece of exercise equipment you bought on the Home Shopping Network, right? Nobody wants your bun and Thymax. We bought that like 12 years ago, okay? Throw it in the trash. It needs to go in the trash, okay? I'm talking about the things you have that are actually goods that other people could benefit from. In the book of Acts, we see the early church cashing in property and possessions for those in need. Yet, our tendency is to sell our old things so that we can upgrade to better things, isn't it? And we never consider that maybe there's someone who could benefit from the things that we have, and we don't consider it because money has a blinding influence on us. And yet we don't see it. Now, you'll remember, and I'm going to take you along with me through our time together, that I said that Jesus is for your joy. You say, well, I don't feel like Jesus is for my joy right now. Well, he is. And therefore, as a result, he's going to actually press a layer deeper in and answer the question, why does money have such an influence on us? And the key to understanding this is in something he says in verse 21. Read along with me. He says, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. Jesus is saying something very simple. He's saying your heart will always follow your money. And where your money goes will ultimately reveal the true affections of your heart. So see, one of the reasons it influences us is because we're not simply talking about our bank accounts or our budgets. We're talking about our affections, our loves, the things that we treasure. Well, how do you know this morning what you treasure? Jesus says, look at where your treasures are going because they betray your heart. You know, you might look at me and say, man, Jeddy's our pastor. He gets up here week after week and teaches. He must really love Jesus, right? Well, I do love Jesus, but here's the deal. Don't consider any of that, all right? Don't look at that. Jesus here says, if you want to know if Mullinex and his family love Jesus, look at their budget, look at their bank account, look at their MasterCard statement, because by those things you can tell whether there's affection for Jesus. Don't pay attention to any of this. Any of us can put on externals, okay? And I'm not saying this is externals, but don't pay attention to what's on the outside. Press in and say, what are the true affections of my heart? How do you know what you treasure? Look at your bank account. Look at your budget. What do they tell you? That's one measure. Let me give you two more. Have you ever heard of this house in Florida called the Palace of Versailles? It's a 90,000 square foot home. I think we have a picture of it. 90,000 square feet. Okay, there's an ice rink, a bowling alley, everything. I can't even think of what it is. There's a 6,000 square foot walk-in closet, ladies, with a gold elevator going to every floor of the house. All right? I don't know about you, but I can like fit all of my clothes in the back corner of the elevator. They navigate this home on Segways, okay? Isn't that crazy? Now, my point's not about the house. I don't really care about the house. In fact, I'd like to visit the house. I'd like to see what kind of why you would build such a thing. My point is this. If you've ever seen the documentary or heard an interview with the owners of this house, there was a point in the construction of this home where everything went dormant because his business fell apart. So they had to put on holds, on stops, the construction of the home. And then his home began to, his business began to revive, and so they stepped back in and resumed construction. And at one point, a reporter asked the owner of the home, he said, do you think that this home will actually ever be completed? And what I want you to hear is his response. He responded and he said this, yes, the home will be completed because I will do whatever it takes to finish it. Do you know what he's saying? He's saying, the home is my treasure. I'll do whatever it takes to finish it. Listen, every one of us in here this morning has something of which we say, I will do whatever it takes to get that. I will do whatever it takes to get that security financially. I will do whatever it takes to get that home. I will do whatever it takes to get that lifestyle. I will do whatever it takes to get it into that income bracket. I will do whatever it takes to get my retirement or my investment to that level so I'll finally be able to rest. Every one of us has something of which we say, I will do whatever it takes to get that. And when we say, I'll do whatever it takes, we're betraying the treasures of our heart. What is that thing for you? Maybe it's not related to money, and that's a different message. Maybe it's romance, or maybe it's security, or maybe it's people's approval. But oftentimes, especially for this conversation, it is related to material things. I'll do whatever it takes to get that. One final way to tell what your heart treasures is what Jesus talks about 6 times in this text. Over and over, he talks about something very interesting that really presses into our hearts. He talks about worry. He says things like, that's why I tell you not to worry about what you'll eat or drink or wear. Don't worry about the clothing on your backs. Don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow has enough worries of its own. And I think Jesus says this because the things that we worry most about reveal oftentimes the things that we love most. Now, I'll share this with you in a positive way. This applies in every area of life. If you're a parent, you have a genuine concern for the well-being of your children, don't you? That's a good thing. If you're responsible for the finances in your home, you have a genuine concern to manage that well and to ensure that you know where your money's going, right? That's a good thing. There's healthy concern, and then there's unhealthy concern that we know is worry, that is concern that gets flipped on its head and becomes an inordinate concern, an overwhelming concern, and it often leads to fear. See, worry leads us to invest inordinate amounts of time of mental and emotional energy on things that are ultimately out of our control. Therefore, worry keeps us up at night, doesn't it? Worry creates stress in our lives, especially related to material things. Worry causes conflict and stress in our homes. Listen, if you're in a marriage, if you're in a relationship, and there's conflict in your home, especially related to money, it probably has to do with fear or worry. You're worried that he doesn't respect the budget like you do. You're worried that she won't spend or that she'll spend too much. You're worried that tomorrow you're not going to have enough, so your current practices of managing your money aren't going to pave the way for you to have freedom tomorrow. They're actually going to lead you toward greater levels of debt and being restricted in your finances. Whatever it might be, it's worry. It stems from an inordinate desire to control things in our lives that are out of our control. So this morning, take a look at what's causing the greatest amount of stress or conflict in your life. What's keeping you up at night? It might just reveal the treasure of your heart. Now, over and over, Jesus says, don't worry about these things. In fact, right here in the text, he says, frantically running after them cannot add a minute to your life. And it certainly is not going to lead you toward peace and joy, right? And you say, well, it's one thing to say, don't worry, but how do I not worry? I'll give you 2 things that Jesus says in the text. Number one, look at Matthew 6:19-20. Jesus says, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Jesus literally says, don't treasure earthly treasures, treasure heavenly treasure. This was spoken at a time when people accumulated their wealth in a cache of precious metals or cloth. So the very things Jesus talks about, moths, rust, thieves, threatened these folks' investments. But what Jesus is saying to us is the same. It's true today. He's saying, don't treasure things that will fall apart or go away. Don't treasure things that will fall apart or go away. Listen, hear my heart on this. Work hard. Work very hard, but not because your significance depends on your work, but because God has created you to work. It's for your joy, it's for the good of your colleagues, and for the glory of Christ as you invest your gifts and abilities and the opportunities he provides. But listen, don't make work the treasure of your heart, because one day it's going to go away. One day they will take down your nameplate, and they will put up the nameplate of the next woman or man who takes your office. And they will give you a cake and a plaque with your picture on it, right? But then they're going to celebrate the arrival of the new manager or boss. Now, that's how it should be, and it's okay as long as work is not your treasure. But if it's your treasure, when it goes away, you're going to fall apart as well. Listen, don't treasure your budget. Budget, spend wisely.
We'll talk about this in the next couple of weeks. Be very diligent in knowing where your resources go and why they're going there. But listen, if there's one thing that we've learned in the last 10 years as a country, it is how fragile economic security is and how undependable our resources today are for tomorrow, right? So listen, budget wisely, but hold your budget with an open hand. Because if you treasure your ability to manage your money, when it goes away or if it goes away, you'll fall apart. Finally, invest in a retirement plan. Man, invest in the future for the good of your family and for the glory of God. We'll be talking about this next week. But don't pour your hope into your retirement plan, because one day you're going to give it away. There's a reason they call it estate settlements, because everybody's estate gets settled, okay? And if your heart is connected to your estate, then when your estate goes to someone else, your heart will too. However, if Jesus is the affection of your heart, then your estate can get settled, and yet you can have joy and peace and confidence. Everything that we own runs the risk of falling apart and going away. And if you treasure those things, you'll fall apart too. Only, Jesus says, heavenly treasure will last. Only heavenly treasure will last. Well, what's that mean? The Bible says that every treasure but Jesus will insist that you die to purchase it. Jesus uses this language in Matthew 6. He says, hey, listen, you can't serve both God and money. You'll hate one and be devoted to the other. You despise one and love the other. He's saying, man, if you pour your heart into something that will not sustain you, something that will not uphold you, it will insist that you continue to pour your heart into it, but it will never fill you. It will insist that you die for it. Only Jesus is the treasure who died to purchase you. That's Jesus' point. Think about what Jesus did. He was the Lord. He had ultimate status and security. He was the Son of the Father. He came to earth and he became poor, not only economically, he was stripped on the cross and became naked and lost everything and he died. Listen, you only die for something that you treasure. Jesus must have looked at us and said, they are my treasure and they're worth dying for. In his book, The Cost of Discipleship, Dietrich Bonhoeffer said it this way: above all, grace is costly because it cost God the life of his Son. You were bought at a price, and what has cost God much cannot be cheap for us. Above all, it is grace because God did not reckon his Son too dear a price to pay for our life, but he delivered him up for us. Costly grace is the incarnation of God. Listen, on the cross, Jesus must have looked at us and said, even if I have to go to hell for them, it is worth the price to pay for them. And when you discover that Jesus was willing to give everything for you to make you his treasure, when you know he cares about you like that, your heart will be changed and you will be released from the influence of money. And you'll be grateful for what God's giving you. You'll be wise in how you manage it, and you'll be free to give it away extravagantly and to actually enjoy giving it away. Well, where do we begin? Let me give you three things very practically, and I won't expound on them long as we close. Three things we'll talk about over the next couple of weeks. Where do we begin? Number one, practically, if you're taking notes, I would encourage you this morning to confess your worries. Confess your worries. I think we've got to start here because worry reveals a lack of trust in the goodness of Christ. There's a reason Jesus uses the language here in Matthew 6, he does, related to food, water, and clothing. For the Jews who were listening, it was a reminder, it was echoes of their own descendants, their own ancestors who worked their way through the wilderness by the goodness of the hand of God. And as God provided for them food and clothing and water miraculously, he taught them to trust him. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 2 and 3, the writer says, remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness for these 40 years, humbling you and testing you to prove your character. Yes, he humbled you by letting you go hungry and then feeding you with manna. He did it to teach you that people do not live by bread alone. Rather, we live by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Did you catch that? That God allowed Israel to go hungry so that he could then provide for them and teach them that what they really needed was not food, but him. There are times when God will allow a need to go unmet in your life to teach you that what you don't really need is that need. What you need is Him. And oftentimes when we bring our needs to God, what we really want is His provision and not His person. If God is for your heart and for your joy, He will first ask for your heart. And sometimes if He gives you the very thing that you long for, you don't have a desire for Him, you just want Him to keep providing. And we've certainly experienced this in our own lives to be true. And therefore, our worry becomes a lack of trust. So we need to call it what it is. And we need to say, God, I'm going to confess this. I'm going to confess the areas that I worry. There are areas where I don't trust You. Help me to learn to trust You. Number two, consider the birds and the lilies. Consider them. Jesus says here in verse 25, 28, and 30, He says, look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest, and yet God feeds them. Look at the lilies of the field. They don't, you know, do this on their own, yet God adorns them. Consider the birds and the lilies. Consider the birds. Do it. This spring, we had a bird who built a nest in a vent over our downstairs bathroom. And for 3 months, those eggs sat there, and then they hatched. And for 3 months, Beth's like, you got to get that nest. You got to get that nest. The problem is there's birds in there, right? So I'm sitting out on my deck one day, and I'm telling you, for the first 2 months, I consider the birds and how to take them out. And then finally, something switched in my heart. In month three, I started looking at the birds, and I'm like, wow. Like, I'm out on the deck for an hour, and countless times, the mom comes back with worms. You know, worm to the babies in the back. The worm, time and time again. And it hit me like, how did mom get all these worms? Right? This is exactly what Jesus is talking about. You're like, that's silly. No, this is Jesus' point. Consider the birds. God gives them the worms. They don't store them. They don't ask for them. In His goodness, He provides it to them. And Jesus says, are you not more valuable than they are? Listen, consider the lilies and how beautiful they are. Are you not more valuable than they are? And what does that say about God's goodness in your life? If He is faithful to the birds, if He is faithful to the flowers of the field, will He not also be faithful to you? I'm telling you this, you know, a transition happened in Beth and Maya's life, in our marriage, when we began to celebrate the provision of God in our life rather than focusing on what we have yet to get. What I mean by that is we used to spend so much time thinking we need this, we need that, and our hearts became very cold and closed off because we weren't celebrating the provision of God in our lives. Celebrate God's goodness. Consider the lilies and the birds. And finally, and last, cultivate generosity. Now, I won't go very far on this because we'll be talking about this in 2 weeks, but Jesus says that when He becomes your treasure, when He becomes the true desire of your heart, you'll begin to get a very generous eye. You'll always be looking for ways to give away to the poor and to your friends and to your community and to your church. And there's a principle He gives us here that I'll let you just rest with. He says, where your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. A simple principle. Listen, if you want to cultivate a deeper affection for Jesus, invest your resources in causes close to His heart. If you want to have a deeper affection for and love for the poor and the orphan, give to the poor and the orphan. If you want to have a deeper affection for people who are far from God, that they might find Christ and be changed by Him, invest in organizations and in the local church that's committed to helping people find their way back to God. Invest your resources where you want your heart to go, and by His mercy, He will transform our heart to care about the things that He cares about. And that's our heart in this series, that God would release us to be extravagant givers, joyful, generous, content. Let's pray about that together, okay? Father, thank You for Matthew chapter 6. I thank You that You love us enough to press deep into our hearts, into our affections, God, that are not for You, into even our idolatry, that we love material things more than we love You, into our worries, that God, we become overwhelmed, and as a result, we don't trust You. And Jesus, You loved us enough to press into our hearts because You're for our joy. And I just pray in this moment that You would begin a work in each of us to spur us on toward greater levels of trust, toward greater levels of affection for You, Jesus, toward greater levels of generosity and investment in causes that are close to Your heart. So God, I pray over us right now. Many of us walk in today overwhelmed by financial things. I pray that you would meet us where we're at, and just begin to confront us with your goodness and your love for us. Now, there's some of us who are wrestling with this idea of generosity in our lives, and I pray that you would confront us there. And you would assure us that as you provide, you've provided so we can be a blessing to others, God. Yeah, just meet us here in this place and shape in us hearts that give freely. If we're being honest today, there's places where we resist this, God. There are messages around us that can contradict the truth of your word all around us. Lord, I just pray that by your mercy, you'd release in us extravagant hearts, Jesus, for your name and your glory. In your name we pray, amen.